thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you from our TD Garden studios, our Star Market broadcast studios at the TD Garden in advance of Celts Bucks Game 5 tonight. But we start with Bruins Leafs Game 6 last night in Toronto. How you feeling, boys?
So my concern is that it's already too late. I'm not predicting Game 7 because I think this series has proven that there's no way to know what's coming next. So would it shock me if the Bruins come out and win 5-2? No, wouldn't shock me. They're capable of it. They dominated the first two games of the series. But when I say what concerns me is I feel like Frederik Andersen is now in a place where everything they're throwing at him is getting either batted out of the net or stopped by him completely, and he's kind of locked in. And they are missing the net. Leafs are blocking shots.
When you say it's too late, that Andersen's already won in the series.
Yes. Yep, that's what I mean. That the goalie is hot now, that the Leafs have sort of figured him out in a little way. And when I say the Leafs, meaning the Bruins, they've figured out the Bruins. They're blocking shots. They're clogging the area in front of the net. So while the Bruins might still be getting shots, I'm not sure they're getting the quality of chances they were in the first couple of games. And so I worry now that Anderson's on a roll and that all of a sudden, you know, you're going to lose 2-1 Game 7.
Anderson's been excellent, but to me this is still more about the Bruins. And now I'm officially Big Jim Worried, by the way, going into Game
Thank
7,
you.
Even though I was so confident about this team. And it's the reason I say it's about the Bruins, because they're tight, they're tentative, and it looks Claude Julien-esque these last couple of games. In that third period last night, if you weren't screaming at your television, shoot the effing puck time and time again, you don't have a pulse or you weren't watching the game. Shoot the puck. Why were they trying to get too cute? And even missing passes, things, pucks going past them. They were a mess. And one play to me, really, it summed up the night. Like 6-7 minutes left in that third period. It was an offsides by Marchand, and as soon as he was offsides, he slammed his stick in such frustration. It encapsulated the tightness of that whole team, especially in that third period. What a mess. That was really embarrassing. And him, more than anybody else, is the guy who I think his stock has gone down in this series. And it's been up and down for him. And at times, look, he's winning you games. But these last two, Marchand has been a straight-up liability.
Chokey.
I mean, that was a revealing moment, wasn't it?
It's chokey.
I mean, he was pissed at the official, I think, for calling offside.
Yeah. And it was close.
No, but the point is the way he reacted.
It was such a bad sign.
Murray.
It was so bad.
There are a million plays in every game where they don't think they're offside and the refs pull the whistle and they don't lose their minds like that. But they weren't able to generate any offense. And you can see, you know, your expression, squeezing the stick.
Chokey.
I mean, it's there. There's no question it's there.
It's a chokey bunch, Murray. It's a chokey bunch. It's been for a while. It's a chokey bunch. Don't tell me they didn't want it or they didn't show up. Like, you could make that claim maybe in the first 10 minutes of Game 5 back here on Saturday night that they sort of took it lightly. But for the most part, that's not their problem. That's never their problem. It's the opposite. It's the other thing. And now they get too ramped up and all that, and you saw. I mean, that's what it is. You know, we gave you this number, or this number's out here. I think Matt Doloff on 98.5 The Sports Hub, he has it. In the last two games, the Bruins have outshot the Leafs. And these aren't shots on nets. These are shots. So these include shots that have been blocked or that have missed the net. They've outshot them 162-82. 162-82, Murray.
That's insane.
So it's not a team that's like...
Of course, more than half of those have been blocked or missed the net.
So I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, it's not like they're being outplayed, quote-unquote. I mean, again... Early on Saturday, I'll grant you that for sure. But that's not that like they're getting outplayed or outworked or they don't care or something. It's this whole other thing. And it's happening again. It's happening again, Murray.
Oh, I thought this team was different. Really, these last two games, that last night was so frustrating. It was so frustrating. It was Bruins of old. That third period was like, this is what I've grown up watching. I hate this. I hate everything about this. So why the hell am I supposed to feel confident about tomorrow night?
How about them not shooting or the...
Oh, God.
The extra dangling that went on in the third period. Especially
Pasternak.
Pasternak and Marchand, chief among them. Too cute.
Marchand getting caught from behind. Like,
too dangly. Too, like, oh, God. Just how many times are you screaming again? Just shoot the puck, fellas. And it's... Frederik Andersen has crawled in their head.
Oh, to me, and that's the part that worries me now, is that, you know, he's locked in. They don't feel like they can solve him, and now it's mental. And you know, that's a hard thing to overcome. And so, look, it can change. I'm not telling you it can't. So I'm not making any predictions for Game 7. But last night, it felt like, oh, boy, here you go. Like, maybe they already missed their chance, and this guy's got – he's on such a roll right now that maybe they can't solve him.
Jimmy Stewart, release the hounds for us, please. 617-779-0985. You want to weigh in on the Bruins last night, the Bruins' this series, your thoughts to Game 7. That's how we're obviously going to begin this program today. How'd you feel about Bruce Cassidy's lineup moves last night?
I could not stand the fact that Wingles was in there. And if he does the same thing in Game 7, I'm going to lose my mind. If this doesn't scream now for Donato, I don't know what does. And I'm not telling you that Donato's the answer. I'm just telling you that they need somebody who can shoot the puck in the net. That's what they need. And I know Donato can do that. And so, you know, you want to go to Toronto and try to win a game 2-1 with Tommy Wingles again, or 3-1 like they did two games ago? Fine. Okay, I get it. Now they're at home, and you know what? The biggest problem that they have had here in the last few games is scoring. Plain and simple. They scored how many goals in the first two games? 12? 12 goals. They've scored 9 in the 4 games since. They have not been able to put the puck in the net, and it's getting more pronounced here as we go. Donato has to play in Game 7.
So the Wingles part I understood going into it because, you know, he was blocking shots and defensively, you know, he played pretty well, so I can understand that standpoint. But now I'm with Maz. They've lost their offensive identity. You need a goal scorer. Put the kid in. Put him in. You have to. Roll those dice. What do you got left at this point?
I just hate Wingles up with Krejci. I just hate that mix. Wingles, if you want him for his fourth line qualities, his defensive work, all those things, and play him in a defensive fourth line capacity. Great. That makes perfect sense. To play with David Krejci? I think moving Nash out worked. Rick Nash was better last night. Much more noticeable. He still can't score. But it's not like he didn't get his chances or didn't work. You know, he was working more off the left side than the right side, which is his natural position. And I think that the move down, maybe it got his attention a little bit, being quote-unquote demoted. And then working off the left side, I thought it worked for Rick Nash. So that piece to it, fine. Tommy Wingles with David Krejci? Would you come on, please? I don't know what Claude. I mean, I don't know what Bruce was thinking there. I don't know what Bruce was thinking. So we'll see if there's an adjustment. We'll see if they're stubborn. We'll see if there's just something about Ryan Donato that they can't stomach in this series. And I say they because I think, you know, we get to these are organizational decisions. These are Don Sweeney. These are the assistant coach. This is everybody. You know, this isn't just Bruce's call like a lot of the calls with Claude. We're not just Claude's calls game to game, lineup wise. So maybe there's just something about the organization sees in Ryan Donato that says, no, no, no. I don't know. You know, obviously Ryan Donato is not ready defensively. Just say it. He's not ready defensively. No question. But I said this last night. Tommy Wingles is not ready offensively to play up there with David Krejci. So again, it's both ends of the ice now. What's your confidence level in Tuukka Rask going into Game 7?
Same as it was going into Game 6.
Good job, Murray. So again, specifically...
So I felt extremely confident in him going into last night.
See, I didn't.
Oh, after I thought, you know, the poking and prodding of Cassidy, I like Rask on the road infinitely better than I do at home. The game that he played I thought was phenomenal, especially late. Here, tomorrow, 4 on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most confident.
You thought Rask was phenomenal?
Late in the game, yes, absolutely. I mean, Mike, they probably could have lost that game. Like, you know, Toronto probably could have got 5 goals.
So now I'm asking you for a feeling on how he played over the 60 minutes, not the last 20.
Oh, really good.
B plus.
Yeah.
B plus. I didn't love the Marner goal.
His stuff in the second period were killers.
I didn't love the Marner goal. I mean, again, it's a backhand, can be tough to read, all of that stuff, but to me it looked like there was a lot of space over there. And I know Cassidy said hit the post and went in.
He was off his angle.
Okay. It felt that way anyway. It felt like he was.
He was off his angle.
Like there was a lot of room over there. The third period, he was dynamite.
Dynamite.
I mean, huge. And ultimately, I don't think he's the reason they lost the game.
Right. So let me put it this way. Was Tuukka Rask the story last night?
No.
No.
Was Frederik Andersen?
Yes.
Partially, yeah.
Here we go again. The other goalie's the story. The other goalie is making more of an impact than your guy. So that's not, I know all the Bruins writers, you know, are going to start crying. I'm not ripping on Rask. He was overall good. I thought the goals he allowed in the second were killers, but when your offense only scores one goal, you can't blame your goalie. Yeah. That meant he would have had to pitch a shutout last night. So Rask was not the story for you, but is Frederik Andersen becoming the story for them?
Yes.
Here we go again.
Oh, to me, it's the bigger story is the ineptitude of the Bruins. Did any of those power plays look crisp to you, or even remotely close? All of it was, just shoot the puck, put it on the net, hope for a lucky bounce.
Frederik Andersen's playing terrific.
He is.
He's selling out for a lot of these saves, and he's never giving up on any play. And this is why you see all these saves with him with his paddle and the diving with the stick and everything. He's not giving up on any single play. And I think it's rubbing off on his team.
So it's been a couple of games now where, and this relates to Donato too, even on the power play, the Bruins are getting the puck, they're moving it laterally, and someone gets a good chance on the opposite side, and Anderson's getting over there to make the save. It's happened two games in a row now. And so to me, they're what, one for their last nine power plays in this series after starting it the way they did? I want Donato in there. I want him in there. I want someone who's going to shoot the puck and pick a corner. Because this is what it's going to take to score on this guy. It's another reason I want Donato in the next game. Put him on the power play. Get his ass in there. And look, to me, there's a million things that sort of crystallize, so I know I'm a little all over the map here. But up there, they're not blowing the whistle as much. They're just not. The Bruins had three power plays total in the three games in Toronto. Here, 16. So in theory, you should get more power play attempts here in Game 7. You haven't been scoring anyway. Anderson is hard to solve. All of these things, I want Donato in the lineup. Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't do it. Even if you've got to cut back the ice time to get him in there, fine, him in there.
Something scares him about Donato. I mean, that's obvious. Something scares him about Donato.
What the hell do you get to lose now?
Who knows what it is? Your thoughts on Game 6 in the books. Game 7 tomorrow night. Your reaction right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Krejci wins it. Right circle. Fired. They score! Jake DeBrusk, who's able to wrist one by Freddie Andersen. 1-0 Bruins. Rask the save. Rebound. They score. William Nylander coming late. Far side. No chance for Rask as this puck squirted to the far wall. One apiece. Bruins turn it over. Over the line. Far side. Now Matthews. Left of the net. Matthews. Back of the net. Rolls it out in front. They score.
Rask thought he got interfered with by Connor Brown. He actually took the stick out of Rask's hands with the skates in the crease. And this is being looked at by the Bruins.
After video review, the call on the ice has been reversed. We have goalie interference. No goal.
Backhand, they score. Mitch Marner. Leafs with a 2-1 lead over the Bruins. Krug fakes right circle. McAvoy, rink wide, fired. And Andersen slid across from the blocker.
Looking for Rask to come out if they can, if they get possession in the offensive zone.
Snapped in by Marchand. Off goes Rask for the extra attacker. And Marleau.
How to attack him. Oh, that's interference.
Plekanec on the line left side. Fires a score as Backes got drilled out at center ice.
Patrick Marleau just took out Backes. Backes was about to make the play.
And the Leafs score into the empty net. The call will not be made. And the Leafs with a 3-1 lead over the Bruins with 1:14 remaining in regulation.
Well, tight game like today, you know. Just got to have, you know, a team who takes care of the details better, I guess, going to win the game. So we have to be strong.
I think their goalie's been real good the last two games. It's been tough to get anything by him, and you got to get in his face. And the ones he's seen, he's doing a good job stopping.
We had a good regular season. We want to have a good playoff. So now we've got to go to Boston, get the clam chowder like I talked about, and then got to dig in and win a game.
Okay, that's how it went down last night. Your thoughts? 617-779-0985. You know the number. You're already lined up, of course. Johnny in Dorchester, lead us off. Go ahead.
So, Murray, I listened to your B-plus grade on Rask. What was your grade on him before the third period?
I'm sorry, Murray gave him the B-plus?
Like a B-minus.
No.
I didn't think he was that bad in that game.
Johnny, what's your point? Who cares? What's your point?
Rask is a momentum killer. He's the problem. When the Bruins are dominating the second period, and he allows that weak-ass backhand goal, and I was shocked that the goalie interference call stood, because I thought Rask was through his stick. Rask is the problem with this team. Rask needs to go.
Okay, so that was the right call. That was goalie interference. That wasn't his fault. And they were right to take it off the board. But he was a momentum killer. That happened last night. He was. He was. He just was. And all the goals weren't all on him. I mean, Marchand misses that easy clear on the Marner goal. I mean, that's on Marchand as much as Rask. And the first goal was just garbage. The first goal they allowed is so bad on so many levels. You just go up 1-0. You got the building quiet. It's a nothing play. It starts with a little clear into the corner that Rask misplays with Chara on the left side. And they get mixed up, and Rask turns it over, really. I think he was expecting Chara there, so yeah, blame Chara if you want to protect Rask. I don't care. But that was a brutal, brutal goal. It never should have come to that. It never should have gone back out to the point. It should have been an easy clear for the Bruins, but Rask and Chara sort of screwed it up on the left side. And then it's just a nothing shot from the point. That's a nothing shot. Bad rebound, and then horrible coverage. I think it was Rick Nash who let Nylander go on the left. It might have been Riley Nash. Cassidy mentioned it in the post game. He didn't say the name, because Cassidy will say the name if it's Rask, but I guess he'll protect certain players. But it was Rick Nash or Riley Nash that lost his guy on the left post, Nylander, who was wide open. But that's just a goal that just can't happen. That is so bad. It's just brutal. I mean, it's not like you got beat on a great play. You got beat by an elite guy making an elite skilled thing and nothing you can do about it. That was a nothing play from the start that they bollocksed from Rask on out. And it just killed it. It just killed your momentum. So I don't care what grade you give them. That goal was brutal. And it ain't the first time we've seen it. So you want to protect Rask, protect Rask. I don't care. But that happened last night. Frank, what do you think?
Well, could they do it any other way? I mean, did we expect them to do it any other way?
Yeah, some people
did. Nothing comes easy. Nothing comes easy with the spoked B, does it? They always, always, always have to do this to us. It is time now for, I don't know what it is, Donato, sit somebody. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I thought you guys were wrong by saying that they were playing too tight. But that first goal last night says it all. You have all the momentum. You've got the building quiet, and all of a sudden, bang, just like that, you let it go. This team is doing it again. They lack the HI factor, the hockey intelligence. All that third period, I don't know how many different languages I could say, shoot the puck. Shoot the puck.
Well, but that is, these guys are right. That is just a classic example of an opposing goalie crawling in your head.
Oh, totally. You start overthinking and you try to do more than you should, and now you're not even getting the shots off. And so, look, the Murray mentioned this, the play where Marchand got caught from behind. Like, and I know that's just one play, but I think, to me, if there's been an adjustment made in this series, and I asked a couple of hockey people about this, Toronto's using its speed defensively. Right, they're closing on the Bruins. They don't have a lot of time, and the Bruins know it. Right, so now they don't know what to do when they get the puck. So they look like they are so screwed up mentally. How many stupid ass passes did you see last night to nobody?
Yeah, and as the game went on, it got worse.
Oh God, it was just driving you bananas. Passes to nobody, just throwing them out into open areas.
Keith in Rockland, hi.
How you doing today, guys? I just like to say I don't have any confidence in Rask coming through tomorrow. This will be his fifth game, 6 or 7 deciding game on home ice. He's 1-3 in the previous, and that one win was the Bergeron game. But
let me help you out. He's 1-4 when facing elimination at home in the playoffs. Tuukka Rask is 1-4. He has about an .880 save percentage in those games and a goals against over .300.
And that's why I'm not confident. But I'm going to keep going back to that game 5 when it was 2-0. We finally got a goal and had all the momentum. And less than a minute later, he gives up that horrible goal. And right then I said, they're doomed.
So it was he and they. It's not just he, but he's on the list there. He and Chara, miscommunication, bad rebound. Rick Nash let his guy go, or Riley Nash, whatever. Nylander was not supposed to be wide open there on the left post. I'm pretty sure it was Rick Nash. So they blew that play. But the goalie's on the list of the players that blew that goal. And that just can't happen. And it's just bad hockey. Like, you can accept getting beat by an elite player, an elite team making an elite play. What are you going to do? Right? Crosby or Gretzky or Messier, when someone comes out and does that to you, they do it to you. That time goal was just a standard dump in and a standard little waffler from the point, and it ends up an empty net goal from a guy wide open on the left post. That's just brutal. And the goalie was a part of it. Max and Cohasset, go ahead.
All right, two quick points for you. One, Rick Nash. I'm so sick of him. Did you see in, like, the second period, he was sitting in front of the net, the puck was right there, and he didn't even fight for it, and the net was wide open. Didn't even fight. And number two, Bruce Julian was really pissing me off last night. He had absolutely no control of his team. That Kevin Miller penalty where you just cross-checked him in the back of the head, like, what are you doing? And too much stick handling and just too much having fun with the puck. Frederik Andersen is not that good. He's not as good as he looks or his stats say. Get good opportunities, shoot the puck on net, and they'll score. It's not that hard.
Okay, a couple points. The problem is they're not having fun with the puck. They're not out there just screaming, "Wee!" No, they're so freaking mental and tight and in their own heads that they're trying to do too much because they don't think they can beat Frederik Andersen straight up. Okay, so it's just the opposite of having too much fun. They're miserable. They have the puck on their stick and they're looking at Frederik Andersen and they're miserable. They're not having too much fun. Wrong. Rick Nash, I thought, fought last night. I thought he fought with the puck all coming off the boards. I thought he fought through some checks. I think he blew the check on the game-time goal. But I think that with the puck offensively, he was more dangerous last night. And I don't know if that's playing on the left side or with new line mates or he got demoted so he got his attention or whatever. I think Rick Nash's problem is he's not finishing. And, you know, when you're paid that kind of money, you're supposed to finish, but who is finishing? So Rick Nash wasn't my issue last night.
See, I think overall they're getting more resistance in front of the net than they were early in the series. You can see it. Toronto's, you know, they're being a little more physical in front of the goal. And to me, the Bruins are going to have to answer that. If Toronto's going to play in that way, the Bruins have to hit back. And I just feel like Toronto's been the more aggressive team when the Bruins have had the puck, certainly. And I don't know if that means dumping it in and beating the crap out of some defenseman or what. But they got to find a way to create some space down there.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-compatible.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, he played well. You know, you see the other guy making save after save, and they come down and don't spend a lot of time in your end, and they score. It's always discouraging, but the first goal, they had a D-zone breakdown. Our forward lost track of coverage, got too high, so they had 3-2 in front. And the next goal, you know, they got to a loose puck in the slot. It's a good shot. Marner can score off the post and in. Yeah, I'd love to him to make that save, match him save for save, but, you know, Tuukka kept us in the third, gave us a chance to win, so... When we were down a goal, and we just couldn't get the next one.
So I think it's the right analysis. I mean, he was good, but you'd like your guy to go save to save with the other one. He didn't. There's a defensive zone breakdown on the first, but there's a defensive zone breakdown on the second. Both of those. Rick Nash, stay on your guy. Brad Marchand, just clear the puck. It's right on your stick. That was a horrible play by Marchand on that back end that he whiffed. Yeah, so it's like, yeah. Except, okay, here we are, and... We're talking about the other goalie being the story of the series. The other goalie is impacting the series more than your goalie. But, frankly, I'm getting sick of arguing about Tuukka Rask. I mean, for some reason, if you cover the team, you like him. If you don't cover the team, pretty much you think he's shaky and you don't think he's great. But it's, so the 12 guys that cover the team, I can't help you. And I don't care anymore. You think he's great? Good. Tremendous. Here are the facts. The Bruins, and I'm not blaming Rask for these. I'm just telling you how they've performed in these situations. NBC had the graphic last night. I think they missed a few games. But with Tuukka Rask, with the Bruins in elimination games in the playoffs, meaning either they or the other team have a chance to move on, they had Rask with a record of 5-11 with a .298 goals against and an .895 save percentage. So that was before last night. We went and looked it up ourselves, and we think they missed a few games, according to Jimmy Stewart's tabulations, including last night. In elimination games, money on the table in the playoffs, the Bruins, under Tuukka Rask, in front of Tuukka Rask, are 6-14. Rask has a .28 goals against and an .884 save percentage.
Jesus.
That blows.
Sure.
That blows. And if DJ...
What's that win-loss record again, too?
6-14.
Oh. DJ Bean and the rest of you, notice I'm not blaming Rask. You can go. You can do it. I'm not... I'm just telling you, this is what they've done in front of him. So whether... Those were unstoppable shots or not, I'll let you go look at the film. These are the facts. So either NBC's number's a little off or our number's a little off, but it's somewhere in there. 5-11, 298 with an 895 save percentage according to NBC, including last night, and you pick up a few games that we think they missed. 6-14, a 280 goals against, 884 save percentage. That just sucks. Tuukka Rask, all-time in Game 7s. 1-2. 365 goals against.
Oof.
849 save percentage. Do you know how horrible that is? And the one win?
Toronto.
Okay. Miracle comeback, 3 goals in the last 5 minutes, etc., etc. With the Bruins facing elimination at home. 1-4. Gave you this before. 880 save percentage. 320 goals against. I don't know what else you want. I mean, they just, at a pretty substantial clip, have not come through in these situations. So whether they're game sevens, whether they're just simple elimination games, that's the track record under this team. Maybe they win this one. I hope they win this one. I'm not going to predict it. You're not going to get tape of me saying, I have no idea what's going to happen. No idea. I'm only giving you the facts of what have happened to this point. Okay? That's it. And you can feel confident if you want or not if you don't want. It's up to you. But that's just what's happened. As someone pointed out to me on FanCred, I'm an investor. I didn't mean to say the name. That's a social media platform I'm a part of. I'm an investor in it. And so that's where I talk to some people online. This guy pointed out to me that Rask has the chance to be the first goalie in NHL history to blow a 3-2, 3-1, and 3-0 series lead in the NHL playoffs. Which makes sense, right? He's only one of a few guys that's blown a 3-0 lead. This would be a 3-1 lead, and he's blown 3-2 leads. I think a couple. So he'd be the first goalie in NHL history to blow leads of 3-0, 3-1, and 3-2 in the NHL playoffs.
The closer himself, huh?
So this is like, again, is it the team? Is it the goalie? I don't care. I don't care what you say anymore. I'm just telling you, this is what has happened behind, in front of Tuukka Rask. So do they play poorly in front of him? Does he play poorly? Is it a bad mix? Is there something in between? I don't know. Debate amongst yourselves. That's just the track record. So I don't know how you go into tomorrow night and are confident. Like, who's confident?
Oh, I'm not.
I'm not. But see,
I didn't feel great about Rask going into Game 6. I mean, I do believe in sort of the bounce-back theory. I like that idea. But frankly, I feel like every game with him is sort of a coin flip. You don't know what you're going to get. I mean, you don't know. There are nights where he's really, really good. And even within the context of a game, like you saw last night, in that third period last night, he was awesome. He was great.
Terrific.
The save on Matthews in particular, I loved because it's so unlike him to come out like that and knock the puck away. That was a great play.
It was like he finally woke up.
Great play. So again, but I do feel like overall, you just don't know. You don't know what you're going to get there. And so I, and I'm sure Cassidy feels the same way. That to me can be really unsettling. See, I got to believe the Leafs right now are feeling pretty good about their goalie. And you know, to me that can
right. So I mean, I'm just asking you just objectively, which team is feeding more positively off their goalie?
Oh, Toronto. It's not even close.
What goalie has impacted the play of the other team?
Anderson.
I'm not blaming Rask. I'm not blaming him. I'm asking you that question. What goalie is impacting the other team more, and what goalie is which team feeding off of more? Okay, that's just happened. Again, it's happened again. Last year at home against Ottawa, they lose Game 6 at home. A different Anderson, Craig Anderson, allows only 2 goals on 30 shots, 933 save percentage. Rask allows 3 goals on 29 shots, 897 save percentage. The last time Tuukka Rask was in this spot, Game 7 at home, 2014 against Montreal. You don't want to even hear this one. Carey Price, of course, allows only 1 goal on 30 shots, a 967 save percentage. Tuukka Rask allows 3 goals on 18 shots, an 833 save percentage. In the series, Carey Price had a 936 save percentage. Tuukka Rask had a 903. I'm not blaming Rask. If you're getting upset, I'm not blaming him. I'm just telling you, this is the historical, these are the facts. And I'm not predicting tomorrow night. I can't predict this crap. I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow night.
Yeah, me either. I don't feel great about it. But, you know, going back earlier into this series, you know, going into the game three or even going into the series overall, the way that they finished the season. You were saying there's chokiness here. And I thought that this particular Bruins team was devoid of that. And shame on me, because that third period, it all came crashing down again on me. I was like,
Felger was right. Like, they do have it in them.
That last regular season game was a big warning sign for me. And who knows? Maybe they pull out tomorrow and it's all forgotten.
Yeah. So while I don't feel great about it, then, you know, the one little thing I have inside of me that I feel where there's confidence is this is the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that is a institutionalized loser in professional sports.
This is true. This is true.
So they'll find a way to screw it up.
The thing I just did, they could do it worse. They could do a little survey and come up with something much worse than I just came up with. So maybe you have that going for you. But, you know, so here we are again. And historically, it hasn't turned out well. And I mean recent history. And the recent history is not good for this Bruins team. Right?
You know, the end of that regular season, too, like, you would have had New Jersey.
New Jersey, you'd be sitting at home probably waiting for Tampa, who'd be doing the exact same thing with Toronto, back and forth, up and down the ice. I mean, that game to me meant everything.
You would have had New Jersey. They missed such an opportunity there.
So, what can I tell you?
Real quick, though, while you're bringing up stats, Anderson in Game 7's 0-2 lifetime, 365 goals against, and an .848 save.
So there you go. Maybe you're facing a bigger bunch of losers than you are.
You know what? I think they should just put a couple of orange cones in the nets.
So there you go. That's your hope tomorrow night. It's the Leafs you're facing. It's not the Canadiens. It's not a team that has a clue and has winning in their DNA. It's just the opposite. You're facing a bigger bunch of choking pigs than you are. So that's something to build off of. We continue with your reaction, start to mix in some other stuff as well in our long commercial-free segment next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Lamar Jackson, we've talked about the Patriots, and maybe they go outside the box for a Tom Brady number two here with Jimmy Garoppolo gone. They actually had Lamar Jackson in their building recently.
Lamar Jackson slings it deep. Oh, my goodness, what a pass. Touchdown, Jalen Smith. He made that look easy, throwing that 75-yard bullet.
There have been some rumors over the last couple weeks about how much the Patriots like him, and then they trade Brandon Cooks to the Rams, and you say, well, maybe they could take a quarterback now that they have the extra first-round pick. He was the only top quarterback that they had in the building. They didn't have Josh Rosen or Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, any of those guys. It was just Lamar Jackson.
Keeps it himself. Got a nice block. Hello, Lamar Jackson. Touchdown, Cards.
Yes, the Patriots will consider taking Lamar Jackson as Tom Brady's successor.
All right, again, I got a giveaway for you coming up here in a few minutes. Something pretty good. Something good for free for you, so don't leave your radio if you want something free. It's from Dunkin' Donuts. There's a Lamar Jackson thing building here with the Patriots. There's just no question about it, right? There's no disputing what's going on. There's some either some chicanery or some legitimate reporting going on out here. Or maybe both. Maybe the Patriots are just...
This is the time of the year where you get a lot of deception, so maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I call that lying.
Okay, there's either this is for real or the Patriots are playing a massive game. And I just want to know your conspiracy theories. First, just let me give you some more examples of it. That was it was Ian Rappaport, right?
Yep.
Patriots had a big pre-draft visit with him, and Ian Rappaport, they were intrigued and interested and blah, blah, blah with that visit. Listen to some of these other guys, and these other guys I'm going to give you are clearly Patriots reporters, meaning tapped into the inner workings of the Patriots, who've been dropped dimes before, who've helped the Patriots before, shaped stories for the Patriots before, etc., etc. Like, what did Adam Schefter have to say this week, Jimmy, on Lamar Jackson?
Adam, what do you hear about the interest that's out there for Lamar Jackson?
Well, Wendy, let me start with this. Over the weekend, happened to be in Utah and spent some time with Donovan Mitchell, the Utah Jazz guard, and obviously a candidate for the NBA's Rookie of the Year. He came to Louisville the same year as Lamar Jackson, speaks to him regularly, and said he is, in his mind, without question, the best quarterback in this class. Now, you'd expect that from a fellow classmate who went to the same classes, who's a close friend, the two spoke over the weekend. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of people who feel that Lamar Jackson is the most dynamic player in this draft. And many of the things that we're hearing about him this year are similar things that we heard about Deshaun Watson last year. Deshaun Watson went to the Houston Texans, who traded up in the first round, and we saw the type of effect he had on their offense. When he played, they won. When he played, they scored. When he played, they couldn't be stopped. And once he suffered that season-ending knee injury, the Texans went away as a threat. I think in this draft, Most people are trying to figure out where to slot in Lamar Jackson. And the consensus seems to be anywhere from the middle of the first round towards the back end of the first round. Anywhere from, say, pick 15 to 25, somewhere in that range. But there's no question that teams are toying with taking him, trying to figure out what to do with him. But there are a lot of people who feel that once he gets to the NFL, he's going to put his mark on this league.
Okay, 15 to 25. Who's picking 23? The Deshaun Watson thing we've heard before. Didn't I think it was Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network say Bill Belichick was intrigued after he played against Deshaun Watson, said, I want a guy that does something just like him. Deshaun Watson, that was floated out there, I think, last week. This whole thing, like, someone's going to draft him and figure out what to do with him, change their offense. How about Mike Mayock? Remember Mike Mayock when
he was
trying to pump up Brian Mallett for the Patriots?
Brian Mallett popped.
Right, exactly. When Bill was trying to peddle Ryan Mallett, they did a joint practice, and Mike Mayock came out saying that Ryan Mallett looked like a first rounder.
First round arm talent.
Sorry, first round arm talent? Remember all that nonsense?
He popped. Mayock's
a big Belichick guy. So Mayock carried some water for him on Ryan Mallett.
Mallett popped.
Listen to Mike Mayock on Lamar Jackson.
The guy that I'm just really excited about is Lamar Jackson. I think he's the most spectacular athlete in this draft. I think somebody in the first round is going to make a philosophical and schematic commitment to this kid and change what they do offensively. And it might not be this year where he makes a significant move, but I think long term, I can't wait to see what Lamar Jackson becomes. So when you look at those five kids, you know, history tells you, we'll be lucky if we get 2 to 3 that become franchise quarterbacks.
Philosophical commitment.
2 to 3. You'd be lucky if you get one, but go ahead.
Someone's going to change what they do for this kid. It may not be right away.
That line is what sold me. Look, this guy has been a mouthpiece, as you mentioned, for Bill Belichick and the Patriots in the past when it comes to the draft. When I heard that, a philosophical and schematic commitment to this kid and change what they do offensively. Change what they do offensively.
And maybe not right this year.
First round arm talent.
That's the Patriots. I don't know how you hear that and don't think anything else. They're going to take this kid.
See, I'm not totally convinced yet. Because as soon as Mayock gets on the bus, I start to think someone's getting used. That's what I think. And I'll tell you, I was just looking it up too. The Deshaun Watson comparisons. These were Deshaun Watson's completion percentages in college. Okay? 67.9, 67.8, 67.0.
Excellent.
Lamar Jackson, 54.7, 56.2, 59.1. So like,
and 56.2 was the Heisman year, right?
That was the Heisman year. Correct. Okay. Yep, that was the Heisman year. So I'm just saying, you know, there's a difference there. Those 8-9 percentage points don't sound like much. That's a ton. And so, to me, I want them to take a young quarterback, and I'll trust Belichick, but there's work to do with this kid.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's talented, so my being against it has to do with I don't want quarterbacks, any of them. Even if Josh Rosen falls to 9, and I like him, I think he might end up being the best quarterback in the draft, but if he falls to 9, I don't want them packing your picks to move up. It's about surrounding Tom Brady with talent. Use those picks in the most unsexy way possible. Offensive linemen, linebackers, fill the holes on defense. That's what I want to see done. No QBs.
Lamar Jackson, with those completion percentages, scares me.
Well, it should scare you. That's why I read him.
This is why Gasper hates that comparison, too. I think he mentioned it to you guys.
Yeah, look, Deshaun Watson, he could identify where the hole was going to be in the defense and get the ball there, and he was accurate when he needed to be. So, to me, now look, if you want to just throw more stuff against the wall, Jim McBride of the Globe did his mock draft today with, quote-unquote, educated information or something like that, and he hasn't taken Kyle LaLetta, the kid from Richmond, in the third round. And he is the son of the Navy coach who comes from a lacrosse background.
This is one I told you weeks ago. We should not even bother talking about any other quarterback. Kyle LaLetta's father played at Navy with Steve Belichick. Kyle LaLetta's uncle was a quarterback or a punter. Sorry, special teamer.
Something like that.
It was like some sort of special teamer at Navy while Steve Belichick was there, and he plays lacrosse. There's no use looking at any other quarterback.
So my guess is they want someone to take Jackson early because it'll leave it open for them to take someone else. And maybe they want the kid Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State. Like, you know, he feels like I told you.
Maybe they want an offensive tackle.
Could be.
And anyone.
McClinchy, the kid from Notre Dame.
Right. All I'm saying is if there's a team that
could use a quarterback but is looking at other positions, you get that team to bite on that quarterback.
Absolutely.
And they've done this often in the past where they've duped teams within their division. Like, I don't know, could they get the Jets thinking? Could they, you know, because they're always trying to, and it's really not hard. They'll talk about a wide-open cage. That's the Jets or the Bills. Like, you know, they're always paranoid of what the Patriots are doing. Are they playing games with, even within their own division to try and get one of these division teams to bite on Lamar Jackson because they don't think much of him? I mean, like, anything's possible, and this is sort of the fun pre-draft stuff. But there's a game being played there on Lamar Jackson.
Oh, definitely. And again, just the exact wording on the McBride thing in the Globe is, here's an educated guess at how the Patriots draft will go. So read into that what you want. Here's an educated guess, and he has him taking Laletta in the third round.
Where they have him taking the first couple rounds?
McGlinchey, offensive tackle, Notre Dame at 23 overall, and then a linebacker out of Boise State, Leighton Vander Esch. Murray, do you know who that is?
Yeah, a lot of people like this kid.
Oh,
well, you know what? The Felger Maz Big Board comes up later on this hour. We'll be throwing at linebackers. So we'll see what the Felger and Maz Big Board says at that position.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.